Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hello all. Welcome to another episode of Armchair Cricket Podcast, a podcast focusing on test cricket by armchair critics of the game. I'm your host, Ajit. In today's episode, we have an interesting guest. Let me say, I've been wanting to invite him to this podcast for a while, but what with one thing and the other, it's not happened. But he's a very interesting person, and I've been reading his blog articles for a while. So welcome to the podcast, Tariq.
Thanks, Ajit. And very, very generous of you to say interesting. Hopefully the listeners find it so as well.
Sure. I mean, before we finish, I think you can plug your own blog, but also more importantly, I can put the link to your blog in our episode notes for this episode, right? So any right. Of our listeners, if they're interested, I'm sure they'll follow up, right?
So I sure hope so.
How have you been doing? How are things?
Things are all right. I just got into the World Cup mode today, finally. Now that the tournament is here. But otherwise, been a very hectic week, actually. I've been traveling. So I just came back to station, as it were, today. And looking forward to catching up with all the cricket coming up.
Perfect. Before we get into the World Cup and the first game that just finished minutes ago, I think we should have a quick chat about who Tariq is. And, well, what keeps you motivated to write and talk about sport in general and cricket in particular?
Right. So one is that I work in cricket in one sense, because I work for a firm called ITW Consulting. We are a sports, entertainment and media consulting company, and we do a lot of work in cricket, because if you're in sports and in India, naturally a lot of your work kind of skews towards cricket. So we do a lot of sponsorship consulting. Oh, we have done work with IPL, BCCI, even a little bit of work with Asia Cup and so on. So that's one of the reasons why I am this connected to the game. And how I landed up here is because of my connections to the game as well. So from a long time, I think as long as I can remember, since I guess the first World Cup I can remember is like 1992, which my entire family was watching. And I was responsible for waking them up in the middle of the night to watch those games starting in New Zealand. And that's how I got into this, because we are an entire family of cricket lovers who used to watch a lot of cricket. And it's been a lifelong love affair that way. So that's what keeps me going, because, you know, sport provides a lot of drama and inspiration all the time of all sorts, on the field, off the field. And I kind of like keeping up with that. And those things along the way have landed me, gigs in a magazine where I was a feature writer and wrote quite a bit on sports. I did a gig on a project with Wisden India, where we're handling their social media. So all these kind of trysts have kind of kept me with the sport. So I write a bit about it, like you mentioned at the top in the blog. And I also do these things called sportographs, which are sort of like line drawings about famous moments in sport. Again, just to put it out there for other fans who want to talk about these, because I always find that fascinating how we you know, interact with the sport and the lessons we take from it. And like you said, right, your podcast itself, that armchair criticism is a lot of fun. So armchair observation of any kind. So a combination of all of this is how I'm here. And, you know, just watching this space evolve is what keeps me going, I guess.
Perfect. When I started this podcast almost 4 years ago, there were not as many games in a week. Now it's hardly, there's a week gone by where there are not, there are no international games and so on. So cricket has evolved to a point where there's enough to do already, right? So for me, at least from purely from a fan perspective, there's so much to follow and so much to read and so much to learn. And I think with so many international teams and all of these T20 leagues around, there's quite a lot of cricket to be had. And you're never bored as a cricket enthusiast, I'm sure. But I see you're also equally interested in, like, let's say, other sports, like when it comes to javelin throw, Neeraj Chopra. I read an article written by you. I also read you do a marathon run. I read your opinions on football and tennis and so on. So how does this come about?
This, I think we'll have to go back to 1992 once more, because that was the first Olympics I witnessed closely. That was the Barcelona Games. And I was fascinated by all the sports that they were showing. And I sort of got obsessed in finding out how these different sports are played. And, you know, we would want to like replicate them in the backyard. So if you saw a javelin throw, you would like pick up a bamboo stick and try and see if you can make them into a javelin and how far can you throw it and so on. So those kind of things got me interested in other sports. We used to watch a bit of tennis when, you know, Doordarshan back in the day used to show like Wimbledon, or a bit of football, especially when the World Cups come around, because at that time there was no satellite television, so not much of your European leagues. But we definitely knew about the Euros and the World Cup, and the whole family would watch that. So it's sort of growing up in that multi-sport kind of atmosphere. And just wanting to know more about those sports. So I was a bit into quizzing as well. So, you know, these two things kind of go hand in hand, that you want to kind of know more. And this, once you're bitten by this curiosity bug, you just go on finding out more about it. So that's how I've kind of kept up with the rest of the sports. And like I said, the writing is basically a synthesis of what I see or what I feel about what's going around. And sometimes because I don't really write a diary or anything, so the blog becomes the de facto or proxy diary. So whether it's about running marathons or you know, watching somebody play great tennis, I just put thoughts whenever I can.
Nice to hear. So I think it's going to be a fascinating conversation with you. I think we should get into the games that are on hand and the tournament that began today.
Oh, absolutely.
Let's start right away, right there, right at the top. Results surprise you at all? New Zealand beating England?
I think ideally the result does not entirely surprise me. What did surprise me was the magnitude of it, because I have been on record often saying that I really enjoy ODIs. I'm one of those people who actually likes ODIs, despite you know, them dwindling now. And one of the ODI formats or templates that I love is when you know, teams score around 260, 270, thereabouts. And the other team is set a pretty decent chase, and then it gets close, and maybe we have a very close encounter with wickets falling in the chase as well, and things are tense throughout the encounter. So you see the whole evolution of the chase of the game within the time period, right? So that's what I was expecting here today. We knew that England would go hard, and this has been their style. This is how they won the 2019 World Cup. So naturally, they came out on all guns blazing, and even with wickets falling, they kept backing their batters to play the shots, which they did. Although some of the shot selection, I guess, left a lot to be desired, and New Zealand kind of took advantage. But what I was surprised with was the intensity with which New Zealand came out and chased. There wasn't much on the pitch, but even considering that, to win with you know, 14-15 overs to spare is quite astonishing in a, when you're chasing close to 6 runs and over. So that is what has surprised me. But again, this is tournament New Zealand. They always somehow turn up. Nobody knows what the secret sauce is.
Somebody said recently, we must all tap into whatever grows there in that land. Apparently, they turn great competitors and great individuals. You're right in as much that the chase was absolutely astonishing. Rachin Ravindra, he's now sort of, with this innings, 100 at number 3. He sort of made himself undroppable because he bowls spin and, well, he can bowl his whole quota for much cheaper on another day, surely.
Absolutely. And I think we have known about Devon Conway for quite a while. We've seen his form in recent times. Plus, the other thing being that New Zealand seem to have just kept their A game for the tournament, because leading into this, they had a very ordinary outing in the one-day series in England. The very same England, I think, beat them in that series, and they come here, not even the same team, actually. England picking a stronger 11 today. New Zealand, technically speaking, slightly short on people because they did not have too many picking options. So, like you say, Rachin Ravindra made his way in and now is probably cementing his place here. Because if he can do that at number 3 and bowl some great spin, especially on tracks where it might help them a little, they suddenly are making a great case for, being almost like a lock for the semi.
At least at the beginning of the tournament, I had not fancied New Zealand for a semi-final spot. And let's just say it's too early in the piece to give them that certainty,
right,
or give them that right, stack. But they have certainly put a foot forward in a way where most people would think more seriously about them whenever an encounter with New Zealand is about to be coming up. If you look at England, they probably were not too bad. You're absolutely right. They threw away a few starts. I think Joe Root himself will be disappointed how he got out because he was holding the innings together.
Yeah.
But you see, every batsman has gotten into double digits. Apparently, this is the first time ever in ODIs that every player who batted got into double digits or all
yeah, double digits. Right? Incredible, right? Yeah.
And then I won't blame much of the tail, but for me, Johnny Bairstow threw it away up to a point. Joe Root himself, Harry Brook, really, Liam Livingston. You would think Ali, they have to put a bit more onus on how they were going. I think they have this strange and strong belief that the next person coming in will get it done. Right.
And yes,
they believe that they're a champion team. Let's concede that. And that belief will always exist in such teams. But today, they were not very far off the mark. If you look at halfway, 282 on this pitch probably was 10 runs or 15 runs under par. 300 would be par score, let's just say, like this on this pitch. But the way New Zealand approached, it was almost like there was a boundary every over hit. You see, between these two batsmen, they batted for 37 overs or 36 and a half overs. And in that, they have hit 38 boundary shots.
Yeah.
So that effectively comes to one boundary shot and over. And what that means is no bowler was allowed to settle. I think they didn't allow any spinner to settle on a length. They kept attacking them. There was at least a boundary hit of most spinners' overs I saw.
Yeah, there was, because I think both Moeen and Adil Rashid went at close to 6.5 or more than that and over.
Well, not only that, I think if you see their approach, it was very clear. There was a length or a range which they were comfortable waiting for. Otherwise, they would just dink the ball here and there. Same for fast bowlers, by the way. But the moment that length materializes, they simply pounce on it. It goes far away. Easy for a boundary or a six.
Right.
And the way they handled Mark Wood, again, they used the space effectively. Short balls were clearly hooked or pulled for sixes and fours. I mean, he's bowling 148 and there is no fear at all. They're driving him down the ground. Some of the most tough shots, I thought, I saw Conway play 3 or 4 of those shots. Very tough shots, the on drive for a boundary between your non-striker and the umpire almost, right? That's quite something.
Yeah.
He hit 3 or 4 of those with a lot of ease. Looked like the pitch is a real beauty for batting. So it sort of serves notice because I think we are going to come back to this ground at least a couple of times before we are done, right? So that's another thing.
Right.
But what did you think of the crowds or the lack of crowds?
I think the lack of crowds is something we have discussed on other podcasts. We have discussed quite a lot on Twitter. And this is something that was building up to this since the ticketing fiasco. That number one, when you open up tickets that late, you're already ruling out a large part of potential visiting fans. And I think locally also in terms of sort of mobilizing a community to come and enjoy the cricket should have been the priority, because these are two world-class teams who are playing the opener of a massive tournament. You have to build it up that way. I think a lot of what both the ICC as being the larger organizer here, and of course BCCI being the host, have miscalculated here is that they thought the top-down approach would work, which is you just broadly advertise and, you know, basically that assumption of supply creates its own demand, that build it and they will come kind of a mindset, where they thought no matter how many obstacles are thrown, people would still show up. And clearly, the result was underwhelming. The cancellation of the opening ceremony at the last moment kind of tells you something that they probably figured out that there are not going to be too many people. And that is why they probably decided to call that off, which also shows that, you know, they were aware that the mobilization has not been done. We heard today stories of them going and distributing free tickets and things like that, which you know kind of makes it sound even worse, because you have to get excitement into the local population to come and attend a tournament of this stature. If you're hosting it at a stadium this big, and obviously sporting culture and organizational efficiency both play a role in this, and here both of them were lacking, because, you know, to take nothing away from the people who turned up, or for that matter the people in Ahmedabad, it's not a case of you know, it's not, let's say, the most sports crazy town in India, and two, in terms of organizational efficiency, like we already talked about, that the ticketing fiasco itself, the amount of time it has taken and so on, has probably deterred a lot of people, because initially very few tickets were released in the first place. The irony is that when we logged on to book the tickets on the first day, I think within mere seconds, not even minutes, the Australia-New Zealand game, which is the opening, the England-New Zealand game, which is the opening game, was shown as sold out on Book My Show. So, you know, that's my thought on that, that it's a combination of the lack of well-rooted sporting culture and community mobilization, and to top it off, the organization and inefficiency. So those two things have combined to sort of keep crowds away.
That's weird. I mean, look, it's a big stadium, and even you have a capacity of 120 plus K, you can imagine even 40K will show up as a sparse crowd. But nonetheless, I think towards the end, it looked a bit fuller. I mean, that's what is expected.
It definitely did.
Right?
Definitely did. I think on a work day, I mean, it was a weekday, middle of the week, in the evening, more people coming up. That of course, is good to see. But I think given that this was the opener, and given that this could have been a statement game, I would say that a little more effort potentially could have been put. But having said that, I think going forward, we might see better responses in the upcoming games. And of course, there will be also a case of India games where this definitely is not going to be the scene.
Right.
But I just wanted to add quickly one point, that one insight that we gleaned from, you know, a friend of mine and me had visited Bhubaneswar during the Hockey World Cup. And there, one of the complaints we found was that a lot of the locals, because Odisha, as you know, is fairly hockey crazy, and they would attend matches even if they did not involve India. So they had kept the ticket prices fairly low, and they wanted the local population to come in. But the problem was, a lot of local population did not know where to get the tickets, because online is not something they're very familiar with. And the second thing was, quite a few tickets had been allocated to government officials and people like that, and they had not really utilized those tickets, or had given to them to anybody who would attend. So there was a few matches where there were large places that were empty. And this was not a problem of there not being demand, but this was a problem of, you know, supply not being matched to demand, which I think could be an issue here as well.
I mean, for cricket, I am a bit disappointed if you listen or if you see that, because cricket is, I think it's still very, very sought after in terms of as a sport, both to spectate as well as to play, I'm sure. So I can understand not putting hockey in a lesser light than cricket, but it is not as popular as cricket in India, but it was a, I think it was a World Cup, wasn't it? So there must,
it was, yeah.
There must have been more people wanting to play, wanting to see it. But nonetheless, coming back to this tournament, if you were to look at the bigger picture now, right? So New Zealand have started really well. England, well, they haven't started well, but this is a longer tournament. But from that perspective, how do you think England will have to do? Because now they'll have to win at least one or two of those big matches. India, Pakistan, Australia, South Africa. One of those, they can't afford to lose anymore, I think.
Yeah, because I think what it does is, even for New Zealand, they have, I think, a game coming up against Afghanistan and a couple of other relatively, we should not say there are any easy games in the World Cup, but games that they would be on the balance of probability expected to win. So New Zealand have put themselves in a very strong position and also a decent run rate as well, because this win gives them quite a good run rate. And I think that is probably England's concern right now, that they cannot afford to drop any other games. They have to be on the top of their game on that. And they also have to ensure that they don't dent their run rate further. So I guess games like India versus England and Australia versus England, etc., suddenly become a lot more important. And let's not forget, I mean, it's a very different Sri Lanka side this time, but in 2019, I think Sri Lanka beat England. So they might be a little wary at this point. But I think, like you said, it's a long tournament. England know they have enough to recover. They probably believe the process. So they might not be as concerned. I think if you ask them, they will definitely say that they're not too bothered.
Mm.
But it definitely gets them into a position where their next game is a must win.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to get into a 0-2 kind of a start. Although, thankfully, it is against Bangladesh.
Well, I mean, Bangladesh, at least they have shaped up well in their warm-up game. So, when you see Bangladesh didn't do very well in their home series against New Zealand. New Zealand got a good tune-up, so to say, to come play in India. But Bangladesh, at least I expect there'll be a different Bangladesh setup turning up, at least from a thought process perspective. But most teams don't give them much of a chance, even though they are playing in home conditions. Is that your thought process as well for Bangladesh?
I think you kind of underestimate Bangladesh at your own peril, as India found out in the Asia Cup as well. It was a dead rubber game, but even then, they put in quite a show. India found out last year when we traveled to Bangladesh that it's not easy to beat them there. So this is obviously Bangladesh that has turned up with a lot to prove. They've had a lot of domestic drama in terms of the team selection, the skipper selection, and so on. But I think the people they have come with, they have two or three very good bowlers, and I think at least three world-class batters at this point, especially in these conditions, especially when the ball is not doing much coming onto the bat, good subcontinental conditions, they should be able to do well. And they have an opener against Afghanistan at the same venue where they will later take on England, which is Dharamshala. So I think Bangladesh may be one of those teams who might be out to upset somebody's plans along the way. So I would be very wary of Bangladesh in this attack.
No, indeed. That's what I expect as well, that Bangladesh may upset somebody's apple cart, even if they may or may not make the semifinals themselves.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
So that's one thing. Then going on to somebody like Sri Lanka, again, a bit of an underdog. But how do you see them faring? Maybe they may do more than cause an upset.
They certainly can. They have the ability. I think sometimes Sri Lanka bring out their best when they are in that underdog kind of position, as we saw in the Asia Cup as well. Unfortunately, they were overwhelmed in the final, but I think they did immensely well in the league games, and especially their game against Pakistan. So they are a team that's capable of pulling together these performances. With the Asia Cup performance, they would definitely be bolstered because the news about Hasaranga's unavailability certainly hurts them, and that's not great for them from any angle. But again, with these new heroes who emerged during the Asia Cup, you know, they have essentially nothing to lose. Like, aside of Netherlands, I think it's Sri Lanka who people have the least expectations out of.
Right.
And Sri Lanka thrive in situations like that. So, at least one or two upsets definitely in the offing from Sri Lanka, I would say.
Right. See, I am just thinking Sri Lanka will definitely also build up well into the tournament. And in the last three games each, I think it might actually open up in a way where if they have a chance, they'll go all out for it.
They certainly might. And I think today's result has done exactly that. With New Zealand winning, it has... I know it is a very long tournament, but even then, it has changed some calculations around. Maybe even some team compositions and all that later on. So you are right. The last third of the tournament would be extremely fascinating. And especially for somebody like Sri Lanka, who then have nothing to lose because a lot was not expected of them in the first place, could certainly experiment. And you never know if any of those experiments pay off. Ironically, I think one of the last games Sri Lanka plays against New Zealand, which might also be a consequential encounter.
Well, at least the last game, India-New Zealand, India-Netherlands, we don't expect that to be consequential. But right up to that point, I expect many...
So Ajit, at the beginning of the tournament, or rather just before, I think when we were discussing, I think I told somebody that while India versus Netherlands is the last game, and it looks like it might be one which is sort of like a dead rubber, there might be run rate at stake for India. One never knows, because there might be position considerations or even qualification considerations, which could happen, which is my early left field prediction on this.
Right. Let's see. Well, it's in Bangalore, so maybe you are drumming up some interest because you are planning to go to it. To the game.
Well, if we get a ticket, that is, it's been almost impossible to sort of like, you know, land an India ticket.
It's a joke, man. I mean, I booked tickets to this game more than a month ago with the local cricket board, and we don't have the details even now how the tickets will be secured. Forget me paying for it and actually having it in my hand even before the tournament begins. That's a bit worrisome for me.
Right.
That was that. Then I think you had an interest in talking about certain teams like Australia and Australia, South Africa, I think, and Australia and Pakistan and all. So let's go there. So which is your favorite team? Maybe it's India, but maybe it's not. Which is your favorite team?
It is India. I've grown up cheering for India. And obviously, I think in the modern cricket fan probably understands it better now that you could have allegiances which don't have to be naturally aligned with just the fact that you are from India, so you'd be supporting India. It might obviously change as well. But I think franchise cricket has kind of taught people that you could have allegiances which are different. But having said that, it definitely is India. And here I'm fairly optimistic and bullish about India going into this tournament. But having said that, I would definitely enjoy watching somebody like an Australia or somebody like a Pakistan, just because they are two very exciting teams. Australia, just for the sheer sake of very interesting individual performers that they have, you know, again, somebody like a Glenn Maxwell or a Mitchell Starc, or for that matter, even a David Warner or a Steve Smith, are very singular cricketers, right? That they're you kind of know that there won't be another one in the same mold once they decide to hang up their boots, right? So that's what interests me in them. And again, with Pakistan, I think they have at least, again, similarly two or three potentially very fascinating cricketers who you would pay money to watch just because they're that good. I mean, who wouldn't want to watch Shaheen Afridi running in it full tilt, because, you know, fast bowling is just such a thrill. As long as he's not doing it against India. So those two teams, I'm definitely bullish about. And South Africa are an interesting quantity in the sense that this is not the intimidatingly good South Africa of the 2000s or, you know, the late 90s. But at the same time, they have some very feisty performers and a lot of the performers who are familiar with these conditions, thanks to IPL and recent tours and so on. So that is why you would, I think two of the games I'm going to do involve South Africa. One of them is England-South Africa at the Wankhede, because I'm expecting that to be a very explosive.
Interesting. Interesting. So when it comes to South Africa, I think they are also sort of in a phase where they're sort of building together.
Absolutely. So it would be interesting to see like a Marco Jansen, and I mean, I don't know how many games he'll get to play given the conditions. It's unfortunate that Notia won't be playing, because another pacer that I wanted to see. But yeah, let's see.
Right. Nonetheless, I think South Africa will put up a strong front. This is a slightly different South Africa compared to previous ones, where, you know, in one of our previous podcasts, I guess said it, that Australia, even if they put the crappiest team together, they'll believe that's the team to win the tournament, and they will go ahead and do it because of that belief. South Africa, it's exactly the opposite. Even if they have potentially a match-winning or a tournament-winning team on paper, they don't believe it so much that they'll end up hurting themselves, something like this. But in this South African team, you see that little bit of mongrel. The way they came back in that ODI series to win against Australia in South Africa, you would think there's more to be had from this team. Probably it's the leadership. But yeah, it remains to be seen if, you know, they are able to convert it into something more tangible. As I said in one of our previous podcasts, if New Zealand or South Africa were to be the, you know, in the final host, lifting the trophy after the tournament, as long as it's not India in the finals, I will not have anything to complain.
Right. I don't think I can disagree there, because, you know, New Zealand, I think New Zealand and South Africa are two very interesting quantities, in the sense that New Zealand is always that tournament team that somehow turns up at tournaments, but again, like, falls short. South Africa is a team that often does great outside of tournaments and then suddenly has this breakdown, especially in the tournament. A lot of people have used the C word there in terms of describing what South Africa like, but it's probably a combination of misfortune and their own shortcomings. So they always seem to fall short that way, which is how we got that epic New Zealand South Africa semi-final in 2015.
Right.
So yeah, I wouldn't mind another epic New Zealand South Africa encounter even at some point.
That's good to know. And now, well, we have to visit the favorites. They are the favorites according to bookies. They are the favorites according to most analysts and, of course, most fans. If you are from the Indian subcontinent, secretly, if you were to ask even a Pakistani or a Bangladeshi, he'll probably accept India are the potential favorites, because they're playing at home and they're at a good place as a team. So do you think this Indian team has in it to go all the way?
Incidentally, if you look on paper, this team, right, it... absolutely does, because if you strip away all the context and if you just look at the player names that somebody said, is this a team that could win a modern limited overs competition, you would probably say yes. It's sort of coming at it from first principles, right, that do they have all the goods that you need. Yes, the case can be made that there is a weakness against spin, there is a dearth of left-handers, which could be an issue, and so on. But let's also face it that they again have those singular match winners who can do their thing on any given day. As the tournament goes on, you usually have somebody emerge as a great performer, which is very likely to happen with four or five really good performers in here. So I would definitely, like I said earlier as well, that I'm very optimistic and bullish about this Indian team. But having said that, I also understand that it has to be tempered with, you know, when the rubber meets the road, in terms of, you know, that there's a great saying in military circles, right, that no battle plan, however well thought out, survives first contact with the enemy. So, you know, we'll only kind of get to know when you see that first ball bowled in the India-Australia encounter in Chennai. But I think India do have it in them to go all the way. But what it would require is a good start. They can't probably, you know, lose a couple of games early or something like that, because it might panic them and lead them into bad decisions. So those are the concerns I would have. But generally speaking, I see no reason not to be bullish on this Indian side.
Okay. Maybe it's the sports fan in you who's believed and been let down one time.
Right.
Nonetheless, as I said, I mean, I am a neutral spectator, but there is always you know, I grew up supporting India, and there is always a little bit of partiality towards India. And if India were to be playing in a game, I end up supporting India simply because I would like to see India win more tournaments for all the good work they do, all the results they achieve in bilaterals. I would like to see Indians do well in multi-team tournaments as well. At the end, that's what defines the greatness of a generation as well, I suppose.
Right. I mean, of course, and because there are so many bilaterals that you can't really use them as a marker, but multilateral tournaments, especially World Cups, are a marker in everybody's lives. So whatever the other merits or arguments about, you know, whether the number of multilateral tournament trophies represents real greatness or not, I think most fans agree that it does. And eventually it does concentrate, or it does skew towards quality. You just look at Australia, who have the most number of them, that there is obviously a certain quality that is required to win tournaments. So you are absolutely right. Would like to see India win more. So in fact, I was curious to know that. So how are you tempering your expectations on this one then?
Look, I expect they will do well in the first half of the tournament, no doubt. Leading into the second half, I'm keeping my expectations realistic, because it'll really depend on how fit the fast bowlers and even some of the batsmen might be. We know our captain is sometimes injury prone, right? And among all that, you also have a good mix of youth and experience in this team. That's something really, really nice. I really believe when it comes to the knockout games, which is where this Indian team often fails, there may be some of the people that we really have, like the likes of Gil, Pandya, they are having this pedigree, which it's mostly a mental thing. So I'm thinking they might be able to step up when the time comes. But I'm keeping it very, very cautiously optimistic.
Right.
So that was India. So any other team you would like to discuss at all? Anybody we've left out? I know we've left out Netherlands. It's my home country.
I think, yes, you should talk a little bit about Netherlands. You play cricket there. So your thoughts on Netherlands or in terms of what you would want to see them do in the World Cup?
So, first of all, to put a bit of context, I'm thinking we are really proud here. The cricketing community and the fans of the sport here in this country are really proud that they're able to make it to a 10-team tournament. Effectively, they're one of the top 10 teams in the world. This is what I'll claim for the next 4 years now, right? That's my bragging.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, to begin with. Next, what it means when you think of this result, they'll get a decent chunk of cash when they leave there, no matter what. But also, they get a decent chunk of change in the next 4 years because they've qualified in the cycle. And they've also qualified for the T20 tournament next year, right? The World Cup. So these are big results as far as people in the Netherlands and cricket playing people in the Netherlands. And putting it on the map in the Netherlands is concerned. It's not much of a sport. It doesn't gain any newspaper headlines. So I'm hoping our lads actually cause an upset or two. They have it in them to actually upset any team on their day. But it will be termed as an upset. It will not be seen coming from far away, right? Like how you would see another heavyweight team in the tournament play. But I'm really hoping they walk away with 2 wins in this tournament before it's done. This is my best expectation.
Yeah. For so which they might be able to do, because they gave a more than fair assessment of themselves in the T20 World Cup. And of course, they have qualified for the next one as well. And like I said, coming in here to be among the 10 teams to pip somebody like a West Indies, no matter what other arguments you can make, it just talks about Netherlands' own growth in cricket as well. Because in the ODI format, being a slightly longer format than T20, the chances of an unlucky upset happening are much less. So you have to have sustained excellence to be able to pull that off. Which I think they have shown. And I think what we are looking for from Netherlands is also the fact that a lot of the teams are not as familiar with the players. So, you know, what you were saying about that somebody might not see it coming might happen.
Right. I mean, these days with people appointing full-time analysts, you wouldn't really think that'll be much of a surprise, because they would have done extensive research into every team they would face. But you never know, right? Teams like maybe Afghanistan or Bangladesh, if they slip up because of the closeness in the contest, and maybe Netherlands will hold their nerve and they're still able to pip one of these teams, right? And I think they have it in them to do one giant killing. So maybe one big team they may scalp it. But in terms of skill set, I think they are actually good enough to take on anybody as well. But it's mostly about big match experience. And simply by playing in tournaments like this is where Netherlands can get that experience. And hopefully, they'll make use of it. They have been training very hard.
Right.
I've been following a little bit of their work. They went to India. They went to Bangalore, actually. And they stayed there. And they did a camp against spin. They hired some local spinners. And they tried to get used to that pitch, the pace of the pitch and spin specifically. Right. So, they did all this. So, they're doing the right things that need to be done. Will it translate into results? I really hope it does. As I said, it's important to put the sport on the map. So in here we are competing against cycling, hockey, right? Mostly individualistic sports. So we want to, and football is the biggest team sport here. You cannot really compare football to any other sport. So we are trying to get some visibility for cricket as well. Right.
So let's hope this is the one, and let's hope you in an upcoming episode of the podcast get to talk about it in more detail.
Absolutely. So that was that about World Cup, unless you think there's something else we would have left out discussing.
I think we've covered most of the teams in terms of a broad overview. I think the rest is we see how the week unfolds, and we take a first look at the teams and then see if we have to recalibrate anything.
Right. So in that case, before we leave this topic for good, who are your four semi-finalists and who do you expect to win the tournament?
Right. That's a tough one. I would say probably at this moment, I would say India, Pakistan, Australia, and I would kind of still stick to England, although obviously today's result can lead to a little bit of recency bias and a little bit of result bias. But I would still say on balance, I think England might just be New Zealand in there. So these are the four I'm sticking with. Australia, Pakistan, India and England. And in terms of winning the tournament, it's a harder call. But I'm going to stick my neck out and say perhaps Australia, just because they kind of seem to have this knack of bringing everything together during a tournament, especially when it comes to like the belief that you talked about earlier, that they just are driven by that. That's what they pulled off at the 2021 T20 World Cup, because they're, you know, they're on paper, and by all means, they were definitely not a team who deserved to win the entire tournament. But you know, they came out of nowhere, and they did. So, and this is one of their more preferred formats, I would say. This the last of that generation of ODI greats, as you might call them, because those are brought up on ODI cricket. Going forward, generations would be probably brought up more on T20 cricket than ODI cricket. So they have all those tools to prevail in those clutch situations. That would be the semi-final and the final. So just giving the edge to Australia.
All right. Interesting. So somehow Australia always turn up when it comes to a cricket tournament, a multi-team tournament, and you have to back them. You're not very wrong if you were to do that. You might not go too far wrong. Let's just put it like this. Let's see how the rest of the tournament shapes.
They are the blue chip stock of this portfolio. Like if you have to pick, you always have to kind of go towards them.
Perfect. All right. Now, I'm going to move away from the World Cup. Let's have a quick chat on this interesting T20A series that has just finished today as well between Australia and West Indies that is being played in Australia. So,
yeah,
basically, West Indies lost the series 2-1, but it was a well-contested series. So, I mean, if you just look at this tournament and look at its result, are you happy with how West Indian team performed there? Because Australia are the preeminent team, again, blue chip. Also,
absolutely. We went there beyond blue chip, really. They are just, they're almost unbeatable and unbettable against.
Right.
So this is quite the result. In fact, women's cricket in particular has seen some amazing results since the T20 World Cup ended. We have seen Sri Lanka go to England and beat England. England was slightly weakened, but you know, even a weakened England is way stronger than most teams. Sri Lanka have probably two or three great performers with them. And one of them was Chamari Adabattu, who turned up outstandingly well to kind of deliver that outstanding series win. I think we've seen the Pakistan women beat South Africa, which is again a lower ranked team beating a higher ranked team. And now we see this of West Indies going to Australia and beating them in a T20. The series was closely contested enough that West Indies, with a little more luck and a few more performances, could have probably won this series 2-1. And very uncharacteristic of Australia that they kind of botched up the defense in the second T20, where West Indies scored in excess of 200. I think 212 it was, which is the highest T20 I chase in the women's game. It's a record chase. But we have to keep in mind that two things happened here. One was, I think, Alyssa Healy got a few calls in terms of captaincy a bit wrong. They were not able to contain Hayley Matthews, who had an absolutely outstanding series. She has an average of 155 in this series. And her strike rate is, I think, in the 170s. We're both phenomenal to score, you know, 300-odd runs in three T20I games. Of course, two of them are played at the North Sydney Oval, which is a relatively small ground and a great pitch, but it was fantastic to see. But the problem there was that West Indies had Hayley Matthews mostly doing a lot of the grunt work. The fact that you won the player of the match in all three games kind of tells you that how it turned out. Australia had performers all around. I think Phoebe Lichtfield did great in the first game as well as the third game. Her innings, again, making the difference. I think she played well in the second game as well. So her innings making the difference in the last game, because I think Australia scored like 190. West Indies fell short by about 40-odd runs. And again, Hayley Matthews scored 80 of those, of the 140, 145 that West Indies scored. So, you know, that dependency was probably the issue. West Indies with a little more quality could have given Australia a run for the money. But what it indicates is the closing gap between these teams in women's cricket. So, like you said, Australia were considered untouchable almost. But now we're slowly beginning to see that while they continue that phenomenal form, because there are people like Annelies Perry or Meg Lanning is out with injury, but when she comes back, they become even stronger. They have somebody like Phoebe Lichtfield who's up and coming. They have so many other superstars that way. But the others are kind of closing the gap, which is heartening. So that was my key takeaway from here, that I would like to see more contests. And let's not forget, India are visiting them later in the year.
When it comes to West Indian cricket, women's cricket specifically, there are a couple of shining stars, but the team is yet to sort of gel around them. And there is no team feeling there yet, I saw. At least in this tournament, it was purely Hayley Matthews and Hayley Matthews for everything, right? She scored most of the runs. In that incredible chase in that second game, it was just her and Stephanie Taylor who made the runs. If you look at the rest of the games as well, Australia, everybody contributed. Phoebe Lichfield, Annabel Sutherland, Georgia Wareham. There are Elisa Perry, of course, and then Alyssa Healy, Beth Mooney. Everybody did their bit, right? And same thing with the ball, right? I think Darcy Brown pretty much shut the game off today. I was following part of it with her pace and everything. So until Hayley Matthews stood there, so at the 10-over mark, it could have been a thriller. Because between them both, Hayley Matthews and Ghaznavi, they had some sort of a partnership going where Ghaznavi would give her the strike and Hayley Matthews would start hitting. But then the moment she got out, you knew the game was done. It was almost like watching India in the 90s when Tendulkar got out. Right?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, good analogy that.
So that's what I felt. But they have a long way to go yet into gelling together. They have many nice bowlers, they have a lot of talent in that team. But to put it together where if not one person, the other stands up to win the game, they have a way to go. This is my thought process.
Yeah.
It remains to be seen if they are able to pull it together. Usually the weaker of the teams finds it difficult the longer the format gets, they say. So next is the ODI series. And you are right that they stretched this Australian team. It's credit to them that they were able to do that. But sometimes you would say yeah, maybe the longer the format, the tougher it would get. Meg Lanning might become available for Australia. So again, it might become such a juggernaut, this Australian team, and it might become inevitable, the results. But what I would like to see is more fight and the same spirit that they have actually displayed here in the T20Is, that would really hold them well in the coming period as well, the West Indian team.
Yeah, I think that's you absolutely nailed it there, that the gap will not be closed overnight, because Australia have a huge lead in this, because they have taken this game and the women's game in particular so seriously over the years that they have a huge advantage and a huge head start. So obviously you can't just sprint and cut the gap in a marathon head start. But what you can do, like you rightly said, is run harder, right? So essentially, show more fight, step up, maybe use these examinations as an opportunity to blood the young talent and get them exposed to these situations, and then also invest in coaching them and developing the skill set, so that brick by brick they're coming closer. So I think that kind of we are seeing that happening. Bit by bit in the game, which is what I'm just looking for. So I hope India are watching this closely and doing their homework.
Indeed. So there is some, I think it will be a very good series whenever India tour in the upcoming period. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, India, I think India have been one of the few teams who have consistently been able to stand up to Australia in most format. In the women's game in recent times, they've been unlucky in terms of the result. So yeah, you're right. Hopefully this becomes a series where some of that turns around.
Now, that was the other international cricket that was currently ongoing. If you were to go to the other international tournament of any note for cricket, that's the Asia Cup. So the women's tournament ended, India women ended up winning the gold. Now the men's tournament is underway. And you see that, Afghanistan, Bangladesh, Pakistan and India have made the semifinals, but Sri Lanka have not. So let's start there. Was that a bit of a surprise, or is this like everybody sending an experimental squad?
It is. Right. Interesting question. I mean, you mean the Asian Games. I think you're saying Asia Cup.
Yes,
which,
sorry.
Of course, it's shown not to be studied. But yeah, this is also an Asia Cup or the Asian Games cricket competition. Mm. Yes, I think not entirely a surprise, because Afghanistan have sent quite a decent team there. Their age group players have been rather good for quite a while now. So it's rather impressive that they were able to defend that low total against Sri Lanka and make it through the final. I mean, maybe the conditions may have played a part. The Sri Lankans not really used to those conditions. It's been hard to get the ball away at that. I keep forgetting the name of the university, the ground where they're playing the games. So it's been tough conditions. We saw it in the Bangladesh and Malaysia game, was it? Or I keep forgetting which one was the one where Malaysia just got edged out.
Yes, I think it was Bangladesh. Just back of three runs or two runs in the last over, they couldn't.
Yeah, it was just a couple of runs, yeah, against Bangladesh, which would have been a very, very famous win for Malaysia, and they really ran them close. So I think they've shown glimpses that way. I think Nepal showed great glimpses against India. They just like they did in the Asia Cup also. Just a question of these guys getting a lot more exposure at the international and beyond the associate level, playing those full members a lot more in that sense. It's one good thing that these games have been given T20I status. Having said that, somebody did not know anything about cricket or a lot of the nuance of recent cricket, and they were asked that, okay, say if an Asian Games were held and top four teams had to be chosen for the semifinals, who would you pick? They would have probably picked India, Pakistan, Bangladesh and Sri Lanka, like you say, but just the exception now being Afghanistan. So it's kind of along expected lines, but all of these teams were made to sweat on the way there, which is the interesting part. So yes, India did send... obviously, a second string side since naturally the main team will be competing in the World Cup. I think more than that, it's the other teams who have developed enough over the years that it could be an interesting. I think the semifinals and the finals should be very, very interesting encounters actually. And by no means would you expect like an India to be a shoe-in against Bangladesh in the semi-final, or for that matter, a Pakistan to be a shoe-in against Afghanistan in the second one.
Right. So in that case, who do you expect will win the medal, the gold one in this case?
I think here again, it's kind of hard to look past India, but because it's the T20 format, one great innings, one good spell can turn things around. Particularly on this ground where they're playing, both matches back to back, the conditions are a little weird. It is obvious that China does not play like a lot of cricket. So this is kind of like a makeshift venue in one sense. And the boundaries are slightly smaller. So it's harder to say. But I think after that, bit of a reality check against Nepal in the quarterfinal, India might just pull their socks up enough and be able to prevail in terms of quality. So I would pick them for doing the double here, emulating the women and winning the gold.
Right.
Against Pakistan probably in the final.
All right. So that will be another blockbuster match. While all of these India Pakistan games might happen or may or may not have happened in the recent past, one more to look forward to.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now that was the Asia Cup. Now, if you were to move on, there are some other cricketing news from the different parts of the world. So, first one, the rest of India versus, in this case, Saurashtra, the Rani Trophy game. Did you feel surprised at all about how it unfolded, that the rest of India were so heavy?
I think, we know that Saurashtra have been a great team. I think their Ranji performances and all that has been outstanding. But it was kind of weird to see them, fold like that in the fourth innings. Primarily because I don't think they were set a really impossible task. Although obviously this looked like a pitch that was deteriorating by the day, and it was always going to be difficult. Anything beyond 200 probably even. But you are right that I'm kind of disappointed that it became this one-sided, that they would fold that quickly in the fourth innings. I'd have expected them to do slightly better than that. And maybe there is something to be said about the rest of India refusing to pick a Jalaj Saxena when they are outdone by a spinner on the last day, or not on the last day, in the fourth innings chase in the Irani Trophy. But I think again the Irani Trophy is one of those things which is like a one-off, and it's the rest of the India squad is always a patchwork of players, the quality wise you probably look at the on paper, the people that the rest of India had and their performances in last season's Ranji, I think you would always have picked them to win this. So this is kind of the WTC final, right? That India against Australia, and you looked at the squads and looked at the conditions and looked at the record and said, Australia are favourites. But even then, you were kind of disappointed eventually that it was Australia who won and fairly easily. I think it's the same case here. On paper, would have said rest of India are definite favourites. Saurashtra, second favorites by far,
right?
Expected result, but slightly disappointed that could have been probably a more exciting contest,
right? Let's see if this is just the beginning of the season. There are some performers here, including Saurabh, right? Mayank Agarwal, and then Sai Sudarshan. Some of these people, they have been in the limelight and they would like to continue to do that, and that way I think they did themselves no harm. Right, somebody like Sarfraz Khan, I expected more runs from him, for example. He had an off season part of it last year, right? So that is last season, cricketing season. I would like him to again come score a bucket load of runs, make it impossible to ignore him for the upcoming domestic season as well as, you know, into the international games next year. So that's what I'm hoping, right? So I would like to see some of those people also step up as far as, you know, purely from a domestic perspective is concerned. But it was nonetheless a good curtain opener to the season. Let us put it like this. For me, I was not really surprised to see the rest of India being way too strong for Saurashtra, even though I expected Saurashtra to compete much harder. Right, this is a Saurashtra team that brushed out that brushed aside quite a few big teams on the way to win last season. So from that perspective, probably they are not yet ready. But come the season, they'll be there. So this is the way I look at it.
Yeah, I agree, because that was my first thought as well. To be perfectly honest, I do not follow the domestic scene as religiously. But even then, like from the broader trends, you kind of knew that this was not a team that would. That would be heavy favorites against the rest of India, who had all these performers, like you say, Sarfaraz Khan being one of them. And all of them delivered. And so Saurashtra had probably just a Cheteshwar Pujara, really. But even then, even he has not been in outstanding form of late. So I think it's a good start to the domestic season in one sense, that all of this focuses the onus on all of these other teams to see who comes out on top in Ranji, because is it going to be or does it fire up Saurashtra to, you know, do a repeat in the Ranji then?
Right. Well, usually teams are built like dynasties, right? So they're not one season and done. They usually do well couple of seasons. It starts and then it continues, because that excellence is built into those set of players, and even the new people who come in sort of imbibe that, right? So you are never sure. So it depends on how indeed Saurashtra may do. And usually they're usually very good in the later half of a tournament, where the spinners come into their own and so on. So let's see if, as you say, they can do well in the longer format. Now, going on, the English PCA, the Professional Cricketers Association, have named their best players of the season or players of the year. So it is Tammy Beaumont for women and Harry Brooke for men. This is purely an English thing, yeah, where English players are recognized for their best players. And Mahika Gaur from women, and James Ryu from young player is a man. And they have been recognized as the Young Player Award. So if you look at it, this is sort of a way of recognizing. This is a purely a non-professional setup, but they still recognize they're among their own. So I don't know if you follow Tammy Beaumont and Harry Brooke, but I know Tammy Beaumont I'm a big fan of. So I'm curious.
I do follow Tammy Beaumont. I really do enjoy watching her, especially I think in the past few series. We watched her, if I call correctly, in the WPL as well. So, I mean, again, in terms of the English season, I think I keep forgetting which is the team she plays in the 100 for. Welsh Fire. Yes. She's played with Welsh Fire. So I think she's always great to watch. I think the one thing about Tammy Beaumont is that you know that you are going to get inventive and interesting batting whenever she is out there. And I think you could kind of say the same thing about Harry Brooke as well, because he also brought in something fresh and interesting to both the test arena as well as the limited overs arena. And he was sort of the poster child for baseball in one sense, particularly given what we, I think, saw of him in Pakistan as well. So, yeah, both very exciting cricketers to look forward to. But since you mentioned Mahika Gaur as well, I think probably one of the most exciting talents to look forward to over maybe the next, you know, 6, 8, 10 years, depending on where her fitness takes her. She's
right,
a tall, fast bowler. So obviously there are fitness concerns, but she's again, like, has the potential to be one of those singular cricketers who everybody then will recognize, because she leaves that sort of a mark when she plays ball.
Right. I mean, she came from the UAE setup, but she always had an eye on the English.
On breaking through into England, yeah.
She's done well, and I would say she has a very promising decade of cricket ahead of her.
Yeah, I'm just I also wanted to play. I mean, I also wanted to say that she probably has a decade ahead of her, but I'm just tempering it with that caveat about fitness. But I would love to see her sort of like play for 10 odd years as well.
Correct. Now, moving on. So this brings us to the last story of today. I don't know how much you followed the minor league cricket in the US, Tariq.
I unfortunately did not because it kind of collides with the major league baseball season, which I was keeping a closer eye on, to be perfectly honest. But yes, you can fill me in on what was going on there, because we had, I think we saw a great first season of major league cricket. So it would be interesting to know how the minor leagues have been doing, because those are the stepping stones onto the majors.
Now, you're right. These are all the aspiring teams whom we may see in the upcoming days, upcoming seasons, that there'll be a promotion demotion eventually, right? You know, they get to go to the major league. So this is Dallas Mustangs won the trophy against New Jersey Somerset Cavaliers. And to be frank with you, I don't know enough myself. But I make sure I educate myself this way, because there are some known names. If you look at the Dallas Mustangs, there is a Norman Anwar, there is a Sujit Gowda, there is a Hamad Azam, there is a Noshtus Kenjige, right? There are some Ehsan Adil, by the way. There are some known names there. So they actually were able to bat first, put on 121. It's a T20 tournament. But then New Jersey Somerset Cavaliers could only make 77. But they had some known names. So Sean Findlay, Adil Bhatti, right? So some known names, not a whole lot. I don't know if you know Stephen Katwaru. So these are all people who are from different parts of the world who have now come to the US to play cricket and make it their home. So from that perspective, they were just that too strong. Maybe, you know, next year we may also hear the name Dallas Mustangs when it comes to Major League. Let's see how it goes. Those are all the cricketing news and stories we wanted to discuss this, Tariq. So thank you very much for accepting to come on this episode.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Rajit. Thank you for having me.
And before we let you go, I would like to ask you to give another shout out about your blog, maybe your social media handles and so on.
Sure. That's very kind of you. You can find me on Twitter at Tariq Laskar. That's TareqLaskar. And you can find my blog on TariqGetsSporty.wordpress.com. That's there on my Twitter bio as well. And hope you enjoy reading some of the stuff that I put out there.
Perfect. So time and other things permitting, I would like to definitely invite you back as a co-host sometime, as a guest on this podcast. And it's been a wonderful chat. Thank you, Tariq.
Thanks, Ajit. I've had a great time as well. And hopefully, yes, we get to talk again and maybe, you know, analyze some more cricket, hopefully during the World Cup itself.
Indeed. All right. We wish all our listeners a good day, wherever they may be listening from. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.